In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with a rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Excellence.
Welcome back into another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Mo.
And this is Dallin. Guys, welcome on into the podcast. It is so good to be here. We are live yet again on YouTube and Twitter on a Wednesday night, Mitch. It's May the 10th, and it's good to be here. Good to be back for episode 165. If you're joining us live tonight throughout the show, hello, welcome. Let us know if you're tuning in, if you have any thoughts. If you're listening in the future on the podcast feed, we welcome you in. We're going to have some fun today. Mitch, we've got a jam-packed show full of some very fun segments I'm excited about and talking NBA playoffs, which are going on right now and continue to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a really fun episode. We're looking forward to this one really since last week when we started discussing it. So lots of fun stuff. Two of our bigger fun segments we're going to have jam-packed in a one episode. So that'll be a ton of fun. And the NBA playoffs, like you said, starting to heat up even more and more. We're gonna definitely delve into that a little bit. So,
yeah, heating up for sure, Mitch. Do you want to jump right into these playoffs?
I think so. I think okay. we should ignore the fact that I look like Marty Huggins from the campaign and just move right in to the NBA playoffs.
Mitch has got a bit of a changed look here. Yeah, just rocking the mustache.
Yep.
And you're not, how are you feeling about it?
I feel great. The girlfriend, not so much. She hates it. I think she hates it.
Okay. Now, no. We talked about this before. Did you talk to her before you went ahead and did it? Or did you just shave it all off and then show up?
No, I did. I did.
Okay. Talk to you her. At least gave her the heads up. That's all that matters.
From the beginning, but
right.
And then I actually did it in front of her via FaceTime last night. So
that might have
lost me some brownie points.
Traumatized her by making her watch it.
I did. She didn't deserve that. She didn't deserve that. That was cruel and unusual on my part. So
yeah,
my bad.
Well, I don't. I think it looks good. I don't think it looks bad at all.
Thank you.
It seems very fitting for you.
I thought it looked good.
And this is another reason why, if you're not joining us live on Wednesday nights, you should be, because you get to see our beautiful faces, and you get to see what Mitch's new look. You know how it's sitting. So you know now you just get the audio description. It's not quite the same. So got to be here on Wednesday nights. But let's get into it, Mitch. NBA playoffs, semifinal round reaction. And again, as I said, you know, the playoffs have been so great this year in the NBA. The first round was awesome, and it continues into this second round. And let's start with the 2-3 matchup here in the Eastern Conference. Boston and Philly, two of the best teams left in the NBA playoffs. And Philly leading this series right now 3-2 after a very important win last night on the road, 115-103 in Boston, which gives the Sixers the lead and a chance to close it out tomorrow night on Thursday at home. Mitch, we both thought this would be a pretty competitive series. We both picked it to go seven games. I had Boston in seven, you have Philly in seven. Those were our picks before the series started, and this series looks like it's, I know Philly has the advantage now. Obviously they're going to be able to go back home for a chance to close it out. But I do think we end up back in Boston for a game seven. These two teams are very competitive, and I think it's going to come down to the wire. But the series has delivered. Harden's been great. Embiid has been great. The Celtics are I just feel like the Celtics are missing. There's so much talent on this team. They're Eastern Conference champs last year, go to the finals. We just haven't seen them click in that full way that I maybe expected in the second round. Backs against the wall. It's now it's time to see what they can do.
This does feel like Philly is more complete right now than Boston does. You know, like you said, Harden's been great. Embiid's been great. I'll tell you right now, if you're the Boston Celtics or Boston Celtics fans, don't let you want this to go seven. You want the opportunity to win this series at home. If you're Philly, don't let them win tonight, because then I think we see Boston win this series in seven. I think you take it back to Boston for game seven, momentum in their direction, in front of that huge home crowd that you know that they're going to have, that raucous crowd, if you will, in Boston. They'll be blowing the roof off that place. So if you're Philly, you better close it out tomorrow night. Get it done at six, because if you let it go seven, I really, really question whether or not Philly's going to be able to withstand that massive home court advantage that Boston is going to have in a game seven situation.
Sure. Yeah, definitely a tough task. You don't want to leave yourself having to win a game seven on the road. Definitely not ideal. But yeah, this series has not disappointed. It's been fantastic. And hopefully game six tomorrow night will continue to live up to this hype. The other Eastern Conference matchup, Mitch, the Knicks and the Heat, 5 seed New York, 8 seed Miami. Miami leads this series 3-1. Game five is actually going on right now as we are recording. And the Knicks hold a 19-point lead about midway through the third quarter. So we'll monitor that and keep an eye on where that game ends up. But obviously the Knicks, again, back against the wall. They are, I think, back at home. Yeah, back at MSG tonight. So, you know, trying to stave off elimination at home. Expect New York to get it done. You actually picked the Knicks in 7 in this one. I picked Miami in 6. Miami in 6 is feeling really good right now, Mitch. It looks like the Knicks will probably take this one, and then we can come back to South Beach and see if Jimmy Butler can have another like 45-point game and just close it out. But this Heat team has been really impressive. The Knicks just seem to hit it at right moments. It's just inconsistency. They don't have the star power of guys that are really game in and game out reliable, right? Randall is good. Brunson's that guy. I don't want to like disparage his name by any means. Brunson, when the playoffs come, Jalen Brunson has been incredible. But Randall, it's just not consistent game in and game out to get what you need out of him. And they don't have the firepower to match Jimmy Butler and that Heat team. But still a fun series. And it looks like, I mean, as of right now, the Knicks are at least going to extend this thing out to a game six.
Yeah, if you don't have a guy like a Jimmy Butler that has that kind of killer mentality in the playoffs, and you can ride the coattails of that mentality, that gamesmanship, seems like you have to have more than two guys that's the tier below to be able to compete with that sort of thing. And Jalen Brunson and Julius Randle are definitely in that tier below. They feels like they need that one extra piece. The Knicks are, you know, the right now it looks really good, but I'll tell you what, before the beginning of this game five, after game four, I thought the Knicks were dead. I mean, yeah. I thought this series was over. Right now that, you know, they got the 19-point advantage and things are looking good right now, about 5 minutes left in the third quarter. So maybe they win this game six or this game five, it goes to game six, but, I think my Knicks and seven pick is definitely not looking as good as your Miami in six. Yeah. So if I could change, I'd change the Heat in six. I think you're right there, my friend.
We'll see how this plays out. But Miami continuing to impress. The 8 seed out of the East looks like they are, you know, seems like they're going to be headed to the Eastern Conference finals, which is quite impressive. I mean, this team did make it there last year. So don't, like, let's not forget. I know they underperformed this year, but we sort of glossed over, like, the Heat were in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. against the Boston Celtics. They were in the NBA Finals 2 years ago against the Lakers, right? It's not like this team has really come out of nowhere. They had really slumped off for too long. They certainly underperformed during the regular season, but it's still a very talented team with guys that have played at a high level and have experience in these playoffs. And here they are again, doing what it takes, you know?
This is a cast of characters that over the last couple of years has really thrived in the underdog role.
Yeah.
And so they're continuing to ride that finals appearance from 2 years ago, the Eastern Conference finals appearance from last year, and really play the role of the underdog to its best capability at being an 8 seed, now flirting with going to another Eastern Conference finals, third in a row.
Yeah, for sure. I do want to point out, I found these in our rundown, some of our past notes, but our NBA finals picks before the season, do you even remember what we did? I want to tell you right now. Okay, because I had no idea what I picked. Mitch, you picked Milwaukee over Golden State in the finals. So obviously Milwaukee got bounced. Golden State, we'll see with this Lakers series. I had Miami over Memphis. That was my pick. I picked Miami to win the finals this year. I just didn't remember that at all after picking that on this podcast. But here we are, you know, like 6 months later, and they're making me look like a damn genius out here picking the Heat.
Absolutely. So
I guess I'm riding the Heat train now. Mitch, let's jump over to the West, the Western Conference. Talk about these matchups, the 1-4 matchup, Denver and Phoenix. Denver leading this 3-2 after they got the win at home last night in game 5. So all the home teams have won in this series. Nuggets took the first 2 games in Denver. The Suns took the next 2 in Phoenix. Denver takes game 5. Now we return to Phoenix tomorrow night on Thursday for game 6. And we'll see if Phoenix can extend this series one more game or if Denver can wrap this up. You had Denver in 6. I had Phoenix in 7. So both sort of in play here. This game 6 is going to be huge. But I think what stuck out most to me about this series is just that Kevin Durant is just really not that same player that we are used to at this point. And maybe he could get back to that. He suffered a very serious injury in the last couple of years, right? And coming back from that at his age, you're just losing athleticism. You're losing bounce. You're losing quickness. And those were ways that he won. And you can see that on the court now. He's obviously still an incredible player. But I think the expectations on Phoenix should change moving forward as we look at this iteration and, you know, what happens if Chris Paul in the future, DeAndre Ayton. I mean, Devin Booker's clearly shown he's that guy. KD's going to be there. That's your pairing. It seems like if Phoenix doesn't pull this series off, we might see quite a shift in how they approach this. And it stood out to me how KD has looked. And again, he's good, but he's still fantastic. I don't want to like diminish this, but he's just not the KD we're used to. And maybe that's past us with where he's at in his career.
You know, one of the things that everyone prided KD on was at a guy his size, that explosive first step that he had to get to the basket. Mm-hmm. And that just doesn't seem to be there anymore. It seems like he does have to kind of slow his game up a little bit. A lot of people forget, like, you know, a guy with his athleticism should be in like the 6'3 to 6'7 range. Yeah. KD's like 6'10. Yeah. You know, like he's a tall guy. Why not change your game up to be more like a Dirk Nowitzki? I know that he doesn't have the girth that Dirk had. He's kind of a more slender build. But Dirk made a living at that type of stuff. And when you lose that quick first step, maybe change your game up to attack in different ways, because what you're trying to do before the injury, or what you're trying to do now, which is what you did before the injury, doesn't work anymore because you don't have that quick first step anymore. Phoenix, I think, is in trouble to get bounced to 6. I had Denver in 6. An aging Chris Paul, a KD who's lost about a half a step in his game. Things are not adding up correctly for Phoenix. They have to get a game 6 win. Clearly to keep their playoff hopes alive, but they also cannot lose this one in Phoenix. They can't get bounced in Phoenix. Yeah. They just can't.
Yeah, I gotta at least extend it to 7, get back to Denver, and then whatever happens there. You know, you're playing against the MVP, or, you know, three-time MVP in Jokic, and that Denver team is obviously legit. But Denver will be a tough task, whoever comes out of this next series, Mitch, as it looks like the Nuggets will probably advance. That would be my feeling on it right now. This next series, though, we got Game 5 coming up tonight between the Warriors and the Lakers. 6-seed Golden State, 7-seed L.A., and the Lakers leading the series 3-1 right now as we are back in San Francisco for Game 5. We both picked the Lakers to win this series in 7 games. But here we are in Game 5, a chance for L.A. to close it out tonight and get a ton of rest ahead of the Western Conference Finals that they'll have to play, which would be obviously really big for them. I just want to maybe, before we get into, I guess, what we think will happen, what's your reaction to where we're at right now in this series? Are you surprised that the Lakers are up 3-1? Are you surprised by the way that the series has played out? Or what are your thoughts about where we're at right now?
I'm surprised. I guess, I'm not surprised. I think that LA has done a really good job at controlling the tempo of the game throughout the entire playoffs. They've kind of played at their own pace and forced the other team to play at their pace. And much like we saw in the Golden State Sacramento series, and part of the reason why this went to 7 games is Sacramento did a really good job at keeping their own pace, pushing the ball down the court, fast pace, just using the young bodies that they have to outrun them. And that came back to bite Golden State in the ass a lot. Now, Sacramento lost that series because of poor defense and poor rebounding, to be honest with you. I mean, they did not crash the boards well at all. But LA does this in the inverse. They're slowing the game down to play their own tempo. And Golden State doesn't really play basketball in that sense. They're kind of somewhere in between a Sacramento Kings pace and an LA Lakers pace. They kind of play kind of in between there. LA's done a really good job controlling the tempo, playing their own game, great defense. I mean, they have absolutely shut down the Golden State Warriors in a couple games. They're forcing Golden State to play the way that they want to play, and that's the reason that they're having success in these series that seem like they should be the clear underdogs, and they're winning them quite handily.
Yeah, you know, I think you bring up a really good point there. The one game that it felt like the Warriors finally played their style and really controlled the style of the game and the way it was played was Game 2, the only game that they won. And you're absolutely right. Every other game, it feels like the Lakers have been in control of the pace, the style of play, slowing it down, forcing sets back and forth. You know, the Golden State wants to get out in transition, get those guys out of the perimeter, and find open shots, right? You're not getting that in sets that when you have to slow it down and possession to possession. LA has done really well on defense, and ultimately it's the difference in this series, in my opinion, has just been role players stepping up, right? I mean, who does Steph Curry have to help him in this series? Who has been good in this 4-game series for Golden State outside of Steph Curry? Like, I can't really name anybody. Jordan Poole's been unplayable. Klay, besides Game 2, has been really like not even existent. Draymond is Draymond. He's probably the second best player they have, but you know, you don't have a Kevin Looney like they had in the Sacramento series. You know, you don't have Wiggins stepping up and Poole stepping up the way that those guys did last year in that
Jonathan
title run.
Kuminga's non-existent.
Yeah. And on the inverse, you have Lonnie Walker scoring 15 points in the fourth quarter of a game to get you a win. You've got, you know, D'Lo being able to go off for 25-30 when you need him. You got Reeves, and the Lakers always are finding a guy to step up, have a big night alongside LeBron, alongside an AD, and get it done. And, oh yeah, AD has been pretty good in this series.
Very incredible on
defense. He's had a couple really good offensive games, but what he's done on defense is really making an impact. So Lakers seem in full control, Mitch. I don't think they get it done tonight. I would say they don't, because backs against the wall, defending champs, I just don't think the Warriors play poorly enough to lose this one at home. But I don't think we come back to San Francisco. I think the Lakers would finish it off in LA in Game 6. I feel confident with the 3-1 lead, obviously, that LA is going to get this done.
Yeah, I feel that I have the same sentiment that you do. It just feels like Golden State, when their backs up are up against the wall, they seem to get it done. I'm going to draw up comparisons to that Sacramento series again, much like the Sacramento series where they had their backs up against the wall. They got the job done. And so this is not going to be a cakewalk game five for LA. They're going to have to play exceptionally well to get it done in five. And I think you're spot on in saying that it probably goes back to LA for game six. And that's where the series gets closed out.
Yeah. Again, playoffs have been a blast. Can't wait for the finals. I mean, we're just a couple weeks away from that. This next round of matchups will be excellent with what it looks like we're going to get. Miami and LA, a Denver maybe, a Philly or Boston. I mean, these are going to be some great series. So, been a lot of fun. I've been enjoying the NBA playoffs a lot, Mitch.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great series, especially in that first round. There was a ton. And the second round is not disappointing as well. So, yeah. Moving on down from the NBA playoffs, we are going to get into our draft. Now, usually we hold this at the end of the show, so a little bit of a change of pace here. We're going to be doing it before the mid-roll because we got something else in the back half that we're going to do. So we are going to do our draft of the best NBA players to never make an all-star team.
Yes.
Much like we did last week, best players to never make a Pro Bowl. Now we're here with the NBA best players who never make an NBA All-Star team. Dallin, you had the first pick last week. I will take the first pick this week. This will be one I think you're going to take me to school on, Dallin. You're going to take me to school on it. You're the basketball guy. I'm not so confident in this draft, to be completely honest with you.
I think, this is... I had a lot of fun doing the NFL one. The best players should never make a Pro Bowl, right? There were some really interesting names that, you almost forget didn't make Pro Bowls. This NBA one is equally as intriguing. A lot of really good players that we'll talk about on this list. But there's a lot of names to pick from. I'm sure you'll have a great top five. But if you're ready, man, you got the 101. So let's get this thing going.
All right. So with the 101, this is tough already. I'm going to go with a Bulls legend, guy that won multiple titles with the team, was the facilitator in that offense, great defensive point guard. I'm going to go Ron Harper.
Mitch, that is like the number one. That is the 101. There's a couple names you could put up there, but I'm right there with you that Ron Harper should probably be the first name off the board.
I mean, elite defensively, great facilitator. I mean, enabled Jordan and Pippen to do off ball things because he facilitated exceptionally well. And like I said, I mean, this guy defensively, you put him in this era against a lot of other point guards, he's going to absolutely embarrass him. So Ron Harper for me is a guy that it was absolutely shocking that he did not make an all-star team in his career.
Yeah. Never an all-star. And you mentioned obviously the Jordan days. I mean, this guy is a five-time NBA champion. He played a lot in the 90s for those Bulls teams, but many may not know 80s in the early 90s, he played for both the Cavs and the Clippers. He was putting up 20 points a game, multiple seasons. He has five seasons of over 20, averaging over 20 points a game as a point guard. Five is 5.8 assists, seven is he had 22 and seven 1 year, 1989, 1990. So again, it's like you look at this guy and you wonder, yeah, how did he not make it? So many good years at high quality basketball. It's a great era for point guards. A lot of good point guards in that era, and he just missed out because of that. But I love that you took him 101 because, I think he is the most deserving 101 in my opinion.
Fun fact about Ron Harper, as good as he was on defense, also never made an all-defensive team.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, there you go.
I mean, might be one of the most underrated point guards of all time. Who knows?
For sure. Who knows? Love it. Love it. All right, I'm up now with my first pick, and if it wasn't going to be Ron Harper, Mitch, it was going to be this guy for me. So with my 101, I will take Sweet Lou Williams. Yep. The one of, if not the greatest sixth man of all time. There's a couple guys, and you know, they might end up on this list. Good six men out there, but yeah, Lou Williams, never an NBA All-Star, played for a lot of different teams, and three times sixth man of the year award. But I mean, he averaged 22 points in 17-18 with the Clippers. He averaged 20 points the next year with the Clippers. 17 points with LA, with the Lakers in 16-17. He had some really good seasons, and obviously got his accolades as the sixth man coming off the bench, but arguably could have been an All-Star in some of those seasons. So got to be Lou Williams here.
Yeah, that was going to be the next guy on my list. So good spot to take him here. Lou Williams, three-time sixth man of the year. Like you said, probably one of the greatest sixth man of all time. Probably right up there with another guy that may be drafted in this list. But Lou Williams, sweet Lou. That's a great pick.
Yeah. All right, I'm back up with my second pick, and I'm going to go with a personal favorite, one of my favorite Lakers of all time. He married a Kardashian. I can't remember. I don't keep track of the relationships. Lamar Odom. We're going Lamar Odom.
God,
with the second pick here. Lamar Odom is, you know, it's funny, Mitch. He came about like a decade early in the NBA. You talk about like position, you know, think about a wing, the, you know, guards, four positions kind of guy, does all the dirty work on the wing. That was Lamar Odom. 6'10", 220, played power, small forward, but switch out on guards, guard bigs. He could play bigger, you know, he could play smaller. Lamar Odom was that dude, averaged 13-8 over his career. He was the sixth man of the year, but he had, you know, hit some really good seasons, averaged 17 and almost 10 rebounds with Miami in 2003, 2004. Obviously with the Lakers and those championship runs, he had some really solid seasons alongside Kobe, had averaged double doubles multiple times, never cracked the All-Star again. When you're with Kobe and Powell, you know, those guys are going to get the accolades and you're probably going to miss out. And that was just kind of his case, right? He was the third player on a really good team, and you're just not going to give three guys an All-Star nod. And so Lamar Odom misses out, but he's certainly deserving of this list. Number two for me.
Damn it. That was going to be my next pick. I took him
because I almost passed, but I was like, no, I got to have him. So I'm glad.
I should have known he wasn't going to make it back.
Yeah.
but that's a great pick. Yep. Lamar Odom. Like one of the few lefties that I like vividly remember shooting a basketball.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
Great pick, Lamar Odom. Down, I'm going to go with another forward for mine, kind of from the same era, a little before, long career, famous bald head, now a TikTok star, apparently. I'm going Richard Jefferson.
Oh, I wanted Richard Jefferson so bad. Yeah. Mitch. Those were the two I was debating. I was like, which, Odom or Richard Jefferson? Yes, TikTok star.
I mean, this guy averaged over 20 points twice.
Yeah.
Both years with the Nets. He was part of the all rookie team in 2001-02. The guy was just, he was one of those grinders, man. He was also one of those guys that was never the best player on his team. Like Lamar Odom, he was the second or third guy when he was in his prime. And you know, he's going to be one of those guys that goes down as constantly overlooked because there was so many guys at his position during his playing years, his good playing years, that just far outshined him at the power forward spot. So, Richard Jefferson is going to be my second pick.
Yeah. Yeah. Jefferson's such a good one. And, you know, he was so young on that Nets finals team that faced the Lakers, right? And it almost feels like if that had just come a couple years later, then he would have got his just due. But he just hadn't developed into that guy yet. And by the time he did, the Nets weren't good or relevant anymore. So he sort of just fell by the wayside and, you know, earns a ring with LeBron and the Cavs in 2016. And I love Richard Jefferson. He's great. That's such a good pick here. Such a good pick. I love it,
man. Yeah. I love Richard Jefferson. My third pick. I'm between a few.
Mm-hmm.
part of me wants to go to another Bulls legend, another Bull champion, but I'm not going to do it. I'm going to go with Mike Conley.
Mike Conley did make an All-Star.
Did he?
Yeah, Mike Conley made the All-Star with the Utah Jazz in 2020-2021 season.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh, he did. I'll be darned. I should check articles that I read before. I should fact check myself. I'm not doing Mike Conley then. Scratch that from the tape. So I'll go with the second guy that I was considering. I'm going to go Jason Terry.
Jason Terry. That's a great pick. He was on my list.
Jason Terry. Another guy that was, I think he had one of those, dunked on him really, really bad.
I don't remember.
He was posterized by some guy and I can't remember when, but, a guy that was also just a really consistent guard, played exceptionally well, knew his role, another great passer of the basketball, but also a guy that got to the rim exceptionally well. So he could put up big numbers with the points as well. He averaged, 13.4 for his career, but you take away those last 5 years where he was kind of not on the back end of the second rotation off the bench. You take those years away and he's averaging, right around that 17, 18 points per game mark, while averaging in the 4 to 5 assists game, 4 to 5 assists a game mark. So, Jason Terry, played at a time with a lot of good point guards and probably just overshadowed and never really quite maybe filled up to the hype that he was supposed to be as well.
Yeah, I think Terry's a great one. And, it was a big part toward the tail end of his career. I spent a lot of time in Dallas, but towards the end of that stay helps them win the title in 2011 alongside Dirk and them. But those early Atlanta years, he was putting up buckets. Even those early Dallas years, he was putting up buckets, as you said. So, yeah, I think that's a really good, really good pick. Sixth man of the year in 2008, 2009. So, again, one of those, sixth man coming off the bench, heater kind of guys, but couldn't crack an All-Star. So, love it. All right. Yeah. Back to me. Third pick up for me, and I'm going to go with the other sixth man of the year. When you think of the award, you usually think of Lou Williams, or you think of this guy, Jamal Crawford.
Yep.
So, we'll take Jamal Crawford third right here. Three-time sixth man of the year. And, just like Lou Williams, he had one season with the Knicks in 2007, 2008, where he averaged 20 points a game. He had a couple seasons where he's just under that, 19.7, 18.6. But, man, just a consistent guy, averaged 14.6 points per game for his career, which is pretty impressive for a guy primarily off the bench. So, Jamal Crawford was that guy coming the sixth man of the year. So, surprising with again, you look at Lou Williams and guys like him, you put up all those numbers, but it's hard to be an all-star when you're primarily coming off the bench, even if you're averaging 20, 22 points a game. So it's kind of how it is, but Crawford was legit.
Yeah. I mean, coming off the bench is so tough to make an all-star team. I didn't check this guy's stats, but another sixth man that, I'm pretty positive didn't make an all-star team was Bobby Jackson. And he comes to mind a lot when we talk about these sixth man guys that could come off the bench and score 20 plus on any given night, but we're never going to get that all-star nod because, they're playing off the bench and come all-star time, they want to take the guys that are a starting five guy every single night. So, but Jamal Crawford, an exceptional basketball player, an exceptional a role player for anyone that he has played for throughout his long career. So,
yeah. All right. I'm back up. I got my second pick here.
I almost got antsy because I really want this guy and I hope you don't take him. So,
I'm going to take the man who was a great player. Maybe he deserves credit for his mom inventing a new name that now feels like every NBA player shares the name. Yes, he got embarrassed by Kobe Bryant, but he was still a fantastic player. Well, Jalen Rose for number four here. Jalen Rose, never an all-star, but averaged over 14 points per game for his career. You know, had a stretch there with Indiana in the early 2000s and with the Bulls, where he was averaging 23, 22, 20 points per game, but just not on great teams and not really, you know, in the sort of relevance of the NBA. So couldn't crack through as an all-star despite putting up some really good numbers in the peak of his career. So pretty surprising when you see the numbers he put up, but yeah, I'm going to go Jalen Rose here, number four.
I mean, despite his, you know, great career that he had, it, you know, he's always going to be remembered for getting embarrassed by Kobe Bryant, you know, the 81 point game. And, you know, he was on my most recent top five most punchable faces. So I have to.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, he does have a punchable face. Well. Yeah.
So I do have to keep that in mind with Jalen Rose. But that aside, career accolades wise, that's a great pick. That's a great pick. Great guy to have on your team. Dallin, you didn't take the guy that I wanted, which is great. Because I still get a shot at him. I'm going to go with Serge Ibaka.
I'm going to
go with Serge Ibaka. Like now, he's not the scoring type, right? He's not a big scorer. In fact, his career high for points per game was only 15.4. But this is a three-time all-defensive team player, a two-time block champion, won a title in 2019. Won a title in 2019 with Toronto. This is a guy that, for all the defensive reasons, should have made an all-star team at some point. Unfortunately, the NBA is a scoring game, and they're going to overlook that for the big point scores, the flashy ticket sellers, if you will. Serge Ibaka is not necessarily a ticket seller, but damn it, was he so solid on the defensive side of the ball. I think that he should have deserved at least a couple nods throughout the course of his career. So I'm going to go with Serge Ibaka with my fourth pick.
Yeah, I like that a lot, Mitch. And, you know, I like highlighting a guy who was a great defensive player, made three straight first-team all-defense in the NBA from 2010, 2011 through the 2012-2013 season. I mean, he averaged 3.7 blocks per game in 2011-2012. That is insane. So, yeah, I love that. I love that. Give him the shine to the defensive player. Serge Ibaka.
Yeah. Serge Ibaka.
Okay. One pick left.
One pick left.
It's getting tough.
It is getting tough. You know, I'm going to go with an old guy. I'm going to go with the old guy. Well, let's not word it like that, but you know, I do appreciate the history of the game. Oh, and yeah. I'm going to go with Cedric Maxwell.
Ooh, okay.
I'm going to go with Cedric Maxwell, a long time Celtic, one time Clipper, one time Rocket. This guy was one of the better players on this Celtics team through that late 70s, early 80s run. Of course, he got overshadowed by all the other great Celtic players that were there. Larry Bird being one of them, Robert Parrish, Kevin McHale, all of those guys overshadowed Cedric Maxwell. But this was a guy that was averaging at the peak of his career, so anywhere between 14.8 to 19 points per game. He was a great defensive piece, averaging a steal a game throughout the course of his career. A great rebounder. You know, it's almost, you know, just a hair under 6.5 rebounds a game. This guy was a great all-around basketball player that never got really the full recognition that he deserves because he was overshadowed by the Larry Birds, the Robert Parrishes, the Kevin McHales of the era. So I'm going to go with Cedric, and I love his nickname, Cornbread Maxwell.
Well, I love it. That's a great pick, Mitch. I'm glad we threw it back a bit to highlight some of those players from a little later in the history of the NBA who made an impact but didn't get the shine. He won a finals MVP. So, you know what? Never an all-star, but a finals MVP. That's awesome. Love that.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I got my final pick up here, and I'm excited that I got this player. I kind of thought you were going to take him. maybe he's not even on your radar. I guess we'll find out. But I am taking a guy who started his career with the Vancouver Grizzlies and was a key cog on one of the greatest NBA teams to never make a finals. We're going Mike Bibby.
Yep. Kings, that's a good one.
Legend. Mike Bibby, who averaged 14.7 points per game over his career, 5.5 assists as a point guard. I mean, and you look at that, again, that Sacramento era. He came to the team in the 01-02 season, left for Atlanta the 07, in the middle of the 07-08 season. So in that stretch, I mean, he had a four-year stretch where he averaged at least 17 points a game. At one point in 05, he was averaging 21.1 points per game and 5 assists. And this guy wasn't making all-star games. But again, you had Chris Webber, you had Peja Stojakovic, you had a lot of other really good players on that team who were probably taking the attention, and you're not a big market. You're Sacramento, so you're not getting multiple all-stars a lot. Now, you know, it happened this year for Sacramento, Sabonis, Fox, you know, those guys are great. But, he just kind of got left out. But, yeah, you look at his numbers, and I don't know how he didn't make one in those Sacramento years, at least one. So, yeah, Mike Bibby's going to be my fifth pick here.
Mike Bibby's a great pick. And you know what? I'm ashamed that he's not even on my list. because he was great. And you mentioned like the big names, the Chris Webbers, the Peja Stojakovics that overshadowed him. But those Kings teams in those early 2000s also had so many great role players. You could even be overshadowed by them. I mentioned Bobby Jackson earlier. Hedo Turkoglu.
Oh, yeah.
Brad
Chocolate
was
on
there.
Those teams, wasn't
Jason? Jason Williams, Doug Christie. I mean, like there was a
Doug
lot
Christie.
Of
yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of great role players on that team. It was really easy to get overshadowed on that team that was just so cohesively good. I mean, they had the superstars, but cohesively that team went so well together that it was going to be tough to outshine one another in that situation.
Yeah, that's a great point. But all right, man, that was fun. We got some solid lists. Let's roll through these one more time for the folks, Mitch.
So, all right. So I got Ron Harper, Richard Jefferson, Jason Terry with my third pick, Serge Ibaka with my fourth, and rounded off with Cedric Cornbread Maxwell.
All right. And I got Sweet Lou Williams, Lamar Odom, Jamal Crawford, Jalen Rose, and Mike Bibby, the best NBA players to never make an all-star game. Never be an all-star. This is surprising to hear some of these names on this list, but fun to get a chance to shed some light on these guys and give them some love despite getting overlooked in their NBA careers.
Absolutely have to give them some love sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, Dallin, that's gonna wrap up the draft here. We're gonna go ahead, take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to play some more games, some of the guessing games. We've got a little resume check, a little who the hell is that, and a return of one of me and Dallin's favorite segments we've ever done on this show. It's going to be a doozy, folks. So don't go anywhere. Stick around, and we'll be right back.
Thanks for checking out the Sports Hour today. We appreciate you wherever you're listening, but if you haven't already, we recommend you check us out and give us a listen on Anchor.
Anchor allows us to provide the best product to you. You can go support the Sports Hour and become a permanent part of the show, like my saint of a mother, Sammy, and my father, David, did.
You can even leave us voice messages with your thoughts and opinions that we can use on the show. Prove to us that you know better than me and Mitchmo.
Moral of the story, people, be more like Sammy and David. Go find us at anchor.fm/thesportshour, guys, and become a part of the conversation. What the hell are you waiting for? Welcome back in to the second half of the Sports Hour with Mitchmo and Dallin. We appreciate you sticking around through the break. Like we said in the mid-roll, make sure to go check us out on Anchor, which is actually now Spotify for Podcasters, I think is what it's called now.
Yes.
But if you type in Anchor, if you type in Anchor, that still comes up. So
yes,
make sure to go check us out there. Leave us a voice message. We'd love for you to be a part of the conversation. Dallin, second half of the show. Let's kick it off with a boys club entry.
Ooh,
a boys club entry. And look, if you saw the NASCAR race this last week at Kansas, you know, it was probably the best race we had all year. Competitive racing, lots of passing. Little controversy at the end, right? Ross Chastain squeezes Noah Gragson. Noah didn't really like it, went to go confront Ross about it. Now, Ross Chastain has built up a reputation for racing guys exceptionally hard, at times too hard. And Noah went up and confronted him about it. The young Noah Gragson, the rookie, goes up to Ross Chastain and grabs him by the fire suit. Ross Chastain didn't like that and just drilled him in the face. I mean, landed this punch.
Yeah.
And I'm going to cause some chaos in the boys club. And I'm going to put Noah Gragson in there for having the balls as a rookie to step up and talk to the guy that's been pushing everyone else around. And having to be the guy that's saying, hey, look, no, I'm putting my foot down. I'm going to go say something to him. Now, he got rough in the face, and he kind of got his ass whooped a little bit. But I'm going to put Noah Gragson in there because, you know what, you got to respect the move. You got to respect the move. Ross Chastain is kind of wearing that Dale Earnhardt-esque type hat right now. He's a guy that causes controversy. He's a guy that races a little dirty. He does some really dumb things out there, but you know what? He's entertaining, and he's a guy that people love to hate. You either love to love him or you love to hate him. And Noah Gragson had the balls to step up and go say, hey, dude, I didn't like the way you raced me. He probably went in a little too hot, a little too aggressive, and he paid for it by getting his jaw rocked. But
yeah,
you got to respect the move. So I'm putting Noah Gragson in the boys club.
Love it. Yeah, lesson learned there for Noah. You know, next time come at it a little a little less hot, maybe you're not going to take a fist to the jaw, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the watermelon man did not like getting the fire suit grab. He did not like it at all.
Oh, man.
So we'll just have to keep them, like, in the boys club, keep them in opposite sides of the room.
Oh, so that's right, because Chastain is in the boys club. So
yeah, for the pass of Martinsville, yeah.
Right, okay, so we got to, like, keep them separated? Are you waiting on by putting them in here?
Well, I mean, I'd love to see a little controversy, but I think that just until things die down, and then we'll kind of let them start to migrate towards the middle.
Okay. Yeah.
We got big boys in the boys club. So, you know, I could put Shaq on one end. I could put Charles Barkley on the other, and they could just, like, hold them back.
That's a good point.
They're going to provide a little humor, lighten it up a little bit, and then maybe they'll start getting along. So who knows? Who knows?
Love it.
Great. Yeah, that's the boys club entry of the week.
Okay.
Yeah. Good stuff. Definitely. Dallin, we're going to get into some resume check, I believe, right?
Oh, we should update. We got to do the Kraken. We got to update the Kraken. Do you want to do that?
Oh, God. You're right. Yeah, absolutely. We got to update the Kraken.
Okay.
Dallin, the Kraken right now, still in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Second round, they're tied 2-2 with the Dallas Stars. Now this is starting to get a little bit, I'm a little nervous for our boys. I'm a little nervous for our boys. When we lost in this series, we've lost bad 4-2 in game two, and then game four, we lose 6-3. We're not hanging tough in these losses. Now, of course we had the big blowout win in game three, but, when we're losing big, and I'm worried that one of these losses may kill any sort of momentum that we've built up to this point already.
Yeah, I think the challenge with the way game four played out for the Kraken, obviously, if you can take care of business in Seattle, win your two games, and you're leading 3-1 through four, obviously you're in a very good spot. But they lose that game and it goes 2-2, but now you go back to Dallas. They've got this momentum after the win. If they can secure that win, now you're down 3-2 and you got to win back-to-back games to advance. And that's going to be a tough spot for this team to be in, who's still, you know, as a unit, relatively untested in the playoffs. They have a lot of playoff experience, you know, across the board, but together, obviously this is the first time. And the one thing about the Kraken, and maybe it's a strength, but it's also a weakness, is that their lack of star power. They don't have one or two guys that you can just rely on to go get goals game in and game out. We saw that in the first series with the Avalanche. They have those guys. Dallas has those guys. The Kraken don't, but what they do have is that every night it could be anybody or it could be the whole dang team going off, right? And so can the team stay consistent, play at that high level? Can you sustain that throughout the playoffs, having a whole unit buy in and not having to rely on a star to just go win you a game once in a while, like, you know, some of these other teams can. So we'll see how that plays out for the Kraken in the rest of this series. But I mean, it's just fun that we're here. It's just fun that we're here. I have been all in on the NHL playoffs this year in the Kraken, and it has been a blast. So I hope we get a 7-game series. I hope it, you know, it's going to be competitive, but big game five. Again, if you can win this one for your, if you're Seattle, you go back to Climate Pledge Arena for game six, chance to close it out on your home ice. That's an opportunity you don't want to miss. So crucial game five coming up for the Kraken on tomorrow on Thursday night.
Yeah. Yeah. Big, big game five opportunity for the Kraken. Have to get it done tomorrow.
Yep.
Have to do it if you want an opportunity to move on. Absolutely. Well, Dallin, that's a Kraken update.
Mm-hmm.
See Kraken. Hashtag see Kraken.
Yes.
But we're going to get into our little fun here on the Sports Hour. We're going to get into a little resume check and a little who the hell is that. So, Dallin, why don't you kick this off and maybe re-explain for new listeners what exactly we're doing here.
Okay, resume check. This segment, I'm going to give Mitch the details, the pedigree, the story of a champion. This week's champion in sports is a World Series champion. We're looking for an MLB team this week. So
okay.
I'm going to give Mitch the details of this championship team. He's going to have three guesses to name the team in the year that they won that championship. We'll give him a couple hints in between some guesses. So that's the segment. So Mitch, we've done three of these so far and you've gotten two out of the three. The only one you didn't get was the first one, which was a baseball one. So this is a chance for your redemption, right? I believe you got the Miami Heat. We did that one. And then the Packers, the 96 Packers. I'm pretty sure you got both of those. So
yeah,
chance for you to redeem yourself with a Major League Baseball team. How you feeling about that?
I need a shot at redemption here. This is baseball is one of my wheelhouses. So I have to pull it out. Have to pull it out.
Okay. Let's get this started, Mitch. All right. Your couple hints here on this championship team. They had the best record in their league with 95 wins the year that they won the championship. This World Series victory was the second of back-to-back rings for this team. Ooh, the roster had 7 All-Stars that's the championship season and included 4 future Hall of Famers. 3 players on this team had a batting average over .325 for the season. In fact, 3 of them ranked in the top 7 of the major leagues that year in batting average. Those are your three hints. Give me a guess and we'll narrow it down some more, but let's start there.
Second of back-to-back
mm-hmm.
world championships. Best record in baseball or in their league?
In their league.
Okay. So best record in the AL. I'm trying to think of back-to-back championships. I mean, the Yankees had some three-peats.
Yeah. That they did.
The Giants won every other year, so I'm going to throw them out.
Yeah, that's true.
Did the Cardinals win back-to-back? I don't think they did. I don't think they did. I think they had gaps. So the only one that's really coming to mind is like the Twins didn't do it. Maybe the Blue Jays, like early 90s. Yeah. Yeah, because I would have made they would have had Alomar. They would have had Joe Carter. I'm gonna go with the 92 Blue Jays.
Okay, the guess is the 92 Blue Jays is incorrect, but okay. It's a good guess. It's a good guess. Okay. Your next hint here. I got your next hint here. This AL team defeated an NL East squad to win the World Series.
Oh boy. An NL East squad?
Yes, this AL team, the team we're looking for, defeated an NL East squad to win the World Series.
This is tricky because, like, was this before realignment where it was the weird East-West thing and before they had the Central? Do I just go for it? Do I just go for it? Because, okay, so...
You
92,
got two guesses, you know, you'll get another hint.
92, the Blue Jays beat the Braves. And 93, I think they beat the Phillies. Yeah, I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to go with the 93 Blue Jays.
Okay, Mitch guesses the 93 Blue Jays. And he is correct. Okay. That is the team that we are looking for. You were so close on the first. I'm glad you didn't get it on the first one, but I'm like, oh, I love that he was that close. You got the first half of the back-to-back World Series there for the Toronto Blue Jays in 92 and 93. Those four Hall of Fame players on that roster, do you think you can name them?
Robbie Alomar.
Yeah. Yep. Roberto Alomar. Mm-hmm.
There was a pitcher, Dave Steeb.
No,
Dave Steeb's not on that team. Okay. Tom Hinkie.
Jack Morris.
Jack Morris. Damn it. Cause he went from the Twins in 91 over to the Blue Jays. Yeah,
and this was tail end of his career, but yes, it was on this roster. We're looking for one more of their all-stars. That was like one of their star players this year.
Wasn't Joe Carter.
No, he was an all-star, but not the Hall of Famer we're looking for.
Okay. I'm going to kick myself.
You will.
Oh, is this not Eddie Murray? Is it Eddie Murray?
Mm-mm.
No?
It's Paul Molitor.
Paul Molitor. Yeah, okay. Damn it! I knew that one, yeah.
And then Ricky Henderson. Ricky Henderson was on this roster.
Right. Ricky was
A starter, maybe he was a starter, but wasn't, you know, obviously prominent at this point in his career. Yeah, he started in, only played in 44 games in left field that year. But yeah, on the roster, obviously, future Hall of Famer. So there you go. Toronto Blue Jays. The last hint for you, Mitch, it was a two-parter, so this was going to help you out. One, I was going to tell you that it happened in our lifetime. So that was going to narrow that gap a little bit. 1993, clearly not 92, 93. And then that the team has not appeared in a World Series since. Since the 93 appearance, Toronto's not appeared in the World Series. So, yeah.
Technically, Dallin, it happened in my lifetime, not yours.
Yeah,
you would have been born about two weeks later.
That's a good point. I might have just barely missed out on the World Series, but... Yeah, October 16th to 23rd. I just looked up the date. Yeah, I wasn't around, but you were there. You remember. Well done.
I was about 2 months old, and you were about 2 weeks away from getting born.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
But well done, Mitch. The resume check. The 1993 Toronto Blue Jays. That was the team we're looking for. Well done. Redemption for you on the baseball team.
Redemption. I can't wait for the next one now. I love this type of stuff. And make me feel smart for like 5 minutes. Just like... that I can nerd out from this stuff. But Dallin, we're going to get into my guessing game for you. And this is Who the Hell Is That? And Dallin, this is and for the new listeners, this is a game where I give Dallin a career path and he has to guess the player. Of course, the same thing applies in this game. He makes his first guess. I have additional hints up to three as he has three guesses to guess this player. So Dallin, are you ready?
I am ready.
All right, Dallin, here is the career path of this NFL wide receiver.
Okay.
Cincinnati, Seattle, Baltimore, Oakland.
I feel like I'm going to get this. If I get this, I want you to know this immediately came to my mind, and I just want to guess it without even thinking, because if I'm right, I'm going to feel so smart. Is it TJ Houshmandzadeh?
God damn it. You can't.
Oh, my God. Oh, man. I just heard it, and it just, like, clicked. I was like, TJ Houshmandzadeh. Oh, man.
Oh, Dallin. That's well done. No. Hey, you got every now and then, you just got to stink up the show and show how smart you are. That's what you got to do.
I guess so.
Well done, Dallin. Yes, yeah, TJ Houshmandzadeh. Yeah. Probably the most fun name to say in NFL history.
So
played opposite of Chad Johnson those years. He was kind of the wide receiver two in Cincinnati to Chad Johnson. The guy out of Oregon State, drafted in the 7th round, 204th overall. He was a 7th round wonder that actually put together some really good years in Cincinnati. In fact, he had multiple. And when I say multiple, and I didn't realize it was this much, 6 years of 100-plus targets,
wow,
two 1,000-yard seasons, a double-digit season. 2007 was his lone Pro Bowl season. He could have been a forgotten all-star.
Yeah, he'd be a great forgotten all-star. Yeah.
2007, actually, these numbers are pretty bonkers.
Yeah.
For playing opposite of Chris or of Ochocinco, 112 receptions, 1,143 yards, and 12 touchdowns. Playing opposite of a guy like Chad Ochocinco, those are pretty good numbers. So, TJ Houshmandzadeh, yeah, well done. Right off the bat,
thanks.
I don't even have to give you a hint. You just heard the career path and boom, it clicked.
Yeah, it was the end of career stuff because obviously, you know, he was in Cincinnati for a very long time, right? It's 8 years, 8 seasons. But I knew he went to Seattle. I remember that. And I remembered the Baltimore, like the weird one. So I put it all together, I was like, yeah, it's gotta be him. So great pick.
Yeah. And I totally forgot the Baltimore and Oakland stuff. I do remember going to Seattle for that 1 year though.
Cause he was pretty good in Seattle. He was like productive. I don't think
he had 135 targets.
Yeah. 900 yards. So yeah. Love it. TJ Houshmandzadeh.
How about it? How about it? And at Dallin, I will admit, I had a different player for you. And it was in the NBA. And then I said his name when we were talking about the early 2000s Kings, and it was Hedo Turkoglu. And so during the break, I had to go to a third. Because you guys don't know, before the show happened, I accidentally mentioned my original player's name, which was Lou Williams. Then had to change it to Hedo Turkoglu, then realized what I just did during the draft and had to change it a third time or second time.
Oh, man.
To TJ Houshmandzadeh. So
that is, that's hilarious.
Yeah. All time performance by your boy, screwing up
your picks. I love it.
I did it to myself.
Great stuff. So. Great stuff. We love the segments. That's a lot of fun. Mitch, it's time to get to the meat of this podcast. And you heard the draft and you heard our playoff talk. A lot of fun. But as Mitch teased earlier, we're going to do a bracket. We're bringing back the bracket on the podcast. We did this a couple months ago around March Madness. We did a bracket of the best college team names in the land. And we had a lot of fun with that. We ended up with the Rainbow Warriors, right? That was our champion, the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors, which I still stand by to this day. That feels great. Feels like the right pick in a couple months in retrospect. But we're back with another bracket today. And for today's Sports Hour bracket, we are going to determine the best defensive player in NFL history. And I love the idea of doing this in a bracket, Mitch, because this conversation is a little nuanced, a little subjective, right? I mean, there's multiple positions, there's different eras. Like, how do you determine greatness? You could kind of go a different way, you know, a number of different ways in this. So why not stick these 16 guys, put them head to head to come down to the end to determine who was the greatest defensive player in NFL history? I think we're going to get there, and I feel like we'll be 100% confident in our pick. I believe that.
I'll tell you what, this was an impossible bracket to make. Like, we left so many good players off this
that
bracket.
It was.
That we'll, of course, I mean, I'm sure they'll come up in conversations as we go through this bracket at some point, but an impossible bracket to make, but this is going to be a lot of fun to go and narrow down who is the greatest defensive player of all time.
Don't hate us for who we left off, all right? Because there were only 16 spots. you know, so we had to be judicious and not overcrowd this thing and give respect to all eras, right? That was important too. So that's what we got, Mitch. Are we ready?
I think we're ready.
Shall we do this thing? Okay.
Let's get into it, man.
Can see it on the screen here. We've got our bracket 1 through 16. And let's start at the top with the 1-16 matchup. And the one seed is Lawrence Taylor. That's easy. The longtime Giants edge rush. That was we were 100% in consensus on that. He had to be the number one. But a tough matchup with the 16 seed of Brian Urlacher, the legendary linebacker for your Chicago Bears.
Mm-hmm.
Got one of the greatest defensive players of all time and one of probably your favorite players of all time. Mitch, how do you sit on this matchup?
Very uncomfortably. This is not a comfy matchup for me, because I know what the right answer is, and I don't want to say it, but I have to. Look, Brian Urlacher was incredible. He was actually a safety coming out of New Mexico. And they asked him to put on 30 pounds of muscle and become a middle linebacker because he just had that incredible football IQ. Of course, he filled that role perfectly and served the Bears valiantly for many years and was a lifetime Bear. Will continue to be a lifetime Bear. Once a Bear, always a Bear. But Lawrence Taylor, in my mind, and I'm just going to come out in the first round and say this right out of the gate, is the greatest football player who ever walked the face of the earth.
Hmm.
He just had so many things that he could do well. Rush the passer, be a run stopper, play in zone coverage, play in man coverage. Lawrence Taylor, LT is just, he's the man. He gets my vote in this one.
Yeah, it's got to be LT. I am right there with you. So we will pick Lawrence Taylor here for the oh my goodness, for the first selection when I get back to the bracket.
Oh boy,
Lawrence Taylor.
Lawrence, there we go. All right.
There we go. I do want to give some love real quick to Brian Urlacher because we won't talk about him anymore. 9th all-time in tackles in NFL history. Hall of Famer. 1-time defensive player of the year. 8 Pro Bowls. 4 All-Pros. I mean, just incredible career and more than deserving to be in this conversation and in this list. So I'm glad we included him. But yeah, yes. LT all the way there. Mitch, the 8-9 matchup. This is an interesting one. We've got Neon Dion. These players couldn't be almost more different. We've got Deion Sanders versus Dick Butkus in the 8-9 matchup. The 8 seed Deion versus 9 seed Butkus. And, you know, Mitch, I'll start on this one. I know you're going to have an affinity for Dick Butkus, the another legendary Bears linebacker, one of many on this top 16. And for the game, for the the history of the linebacker position, and when we look at some of the legendary players of the past, he is absolutely in that conversation, deserving to be here. But Deion Sanders, though his career was maybe not as long as a lot of guys, was one of the most prolific defensive players in his prime time of all time. 53 career interceptions, 9 touchdowns in 188 games, 6-time All-Pro player and a defensive player of the year. My pick is going to be for Deion Sanders on this one. I think we got to go Deion. As much as I would love to give the respect to Dick Butkus, he's too good to pass on this one.
Dick Butkus is exactly what a linebacker should be. He is the prototype. He's the big-bodied, mean, nasty, I'm gonna rip your arm out of its socket, and then while I'm laying on top of you at the bottom of a pile, I'm gonna tell you, don't go anywhere, I'll be right back. And he does it every single time. You watch some of the old highlight tapes of Dick Butkus, and it's like vicious what he does to people. I mean, he is what you look for in a linebacker. However, on the opposite end of the spectrum, Deion Sanders ushered in the modern era of football. And while Dick did it, it basically laid the foundation for what the prototype linebacker should look like, Dion ushered in an entire era. You mentioned the accolades already. He was a dual sport athlete for a while.
Mm-hmm.
As much as I love Dick Butkus, I'm going to save my vote for a Bears linebacker, and I'm going to give it to Dion.
Okay, we'll go Dion Sanders here, and we'll move on to the 5-12 matchup. And this is, I mean, these are all great matchups, but fun one here on the defensive line. The 5-seed Bruce Smith, the all-time sacks leader in the NFL, against Mean Joe Green, one of the most iconic, legendary defensive players of all time. I mean, a nickname like that just gets included in your name is incredible. Mean Joe Green, a two-time defensive player of the year, 10-time Pro Bowler, 77.5 sacks over 181 games. But then Bruce Smith, again, as we said, leader in all-time sacks, 200 career sacks. Two-time defensive player of the year, 11 Pro Bowls, 8 All-Pros, 279 games in his career, long, long career. And that's how he gets those numbers. Obviously, you know, doesn't have sort of this, he's not the standout like a Lawrence Taylor is on the edge, like we've talked about, but endurance, long career, has the accolades. I love Mean Joe Green, but I feel like for me, I'd be leaning Bruce Smith here.
Yeah, this is tough. This is a tough one. I mean, all of these are going to be tough. But, you know, for me, Bruce Smith was the quintessential sack artist. He just, I mean, and that's reflected in his career statistics. He's the all-time sack leader for a reason, yeah. Right? He was a part of those that built those Bills teams that made it to 4 straight Super Bowls. Had a quick stint there, I believe, with Washington at the end of his career where he got his 200th sack. Bruce Smith carried a defense. I think you could say that he carried a brunt of that Bills defense. I mean, there was, you know, I think Talley was on that defense as well, but Bruce Smith was the guy in that defense. And I think compared to Mean Joe, man, he was a part of that Steel Curtain defense that had a lot of great players on it. Jack Lambert, Jack Ham. There's two names right there we'd left off that we were considering. Mel Blount was on those teams. So you look at what Mean Joe had around him compared to what Bruce Smith had around him. Bruce Smith really carried that defense a lot further, carried more of that defense than what Mean Joe did with his. So I'm going to be on your side here, and I'm going to go with Bruce Smith.
Okay, we're in agreement here. Bruce Smith advances. So far, the top seed's all advancing. We'll see if we get an upset here at some point. Next matchup, Mitch, 13-4 matchup. We've got couple linebackers, legendary linebackers. We've got the third Bears linebacker on the list, Mike Singletary, who is the 13th seed, taking on Ray Lewis, the 4th seed, the all-time leader in tackles in NFL history. Ray Lewis, 2,059 tackles over his career of 228 games. Both these guys, 2-time defensive players of the year. I mean, both guys have all the accolades in the world, supporting this argument. This is a tough one, Mitch. I'll let you go first here on your thoughts. We got another Bears player in here. I know that's tough for you. Ray Lewis is the higher seed, and I mean, Ray Lewis is Ray Lewis. So how are you, where are you thinking here?
Two players that were so exceptionally similar, yet so exceptionally different. The intensity with which both played, right? Ray Lewis was the oorah guy. He was the talker. He was the one that was yelling and getting everyone hyped up, the trash talker. I mean, and he backed it up with his play, of course. There's a reason they called Mike Singletary Samurai Mike, and it's because he played with a quiet demeanor around him. But the level of intensity, make no bones about it, was the same for both of them. In my opinion, Mike Singletary did first what everything Ray Lewis did. Mike Singletary was the original Ray Lewis as far as playing with that level of intensity. And so I'm going with my boy Samurai Mike to move on over Ray Lewis.
Yeah, I knew you would, and I totally get it. And Mike Singletary is definitely deserving to be in here. I just, when it comes down to it, and these two players, when you're comparing them, all the similarities are there. Career-wise, very similar. Again, you know, Ray Lewis played longer, so he has, you know, a chance to kind of rack up more accolades, get the tackle, you know, record and whatnot. But I just don't think there were players that incited as much fear, that had the aggression and the theatrics on defense the way that Ray Lewis did. I mean, the way he would come out, his iconic, you know, arching his back and screaming into the air. I mean, you remember this as a kid. You just watch that and you're like, I would be scared shitless of that guy. I don't want him tackling me at all. And NFL players, grown adults, felt like that as well, playing against him for all those years. And so that just stands out for me with Ray Lewis, and that makes this really hard for me to not go with Ray Lewis on this one.
So the argument I will make is that Mike Singletary did the same thing. He just did it quietly. If you ever listen to old players that played against Mike Singletary talk about Mike Singletary, they'll say that he had this look in his eyes, like a serial killer, that was just, he was there to end you. He didn't have to hoorah. He didn't have to do all the theatrics. All he had to do was give you the look, and you knew you were in for a long day with Mike. And so that's kind of where I differentiate these things. And, you know, of course, old school Mitch coming out. I'm going to go with the old school mentality of intimidation over the theatrics of Ray Lewis. But I mean, I understand why you're going with Ray, but I'm still sticking with Mike. I'm sticking with Mike here.
What's our tiebreaker?
I got a coin.
We flip a coin. Okay. I'm down. We'll flip a coin for Ray Lewis, Mike Singletary here. And I think that's fitting, because this is really, like, these guys are so neck and neck. So deserving.
Heads. Tails.
Okay. Heads was Jesus. Coin, so. Okay. Yep. Yeah. Am I calling it in the air? Heads.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. No, I'll flip again. Sorry.
Okay.
Ready?
Now I got to go tails now.
Tails?
Yep.
It is tails.
Okay. It is tails, and Ray Lewis will advance. No upset in the 13-4 matchup. Point flip gives it to Ray Lewis. That's a tough call, Mitch. None of your Bear linebackers made it through, but they had some tough matchups there. They had some tough matchups in the first round, so we didn't make it easy on them.
Yeah.
Another great matchup here in the 3-14. A couple legendary safeties. 3-seed Ronnie Lott, 14-seed. Ed Reed, man. What an incredible career for Ed Reed. 7th in career interceptions, 9 Pro Bowls, 5 All-Pros, 64 interceptions over his 174-year career. Ronnie Lott on the other side.
174-year career.
174-game career.
Holy smokes.
Played since the Civil War. But Ronnie Lott, you know, surprising. Ronnie Lott's one of those defensive players you think of when you think of the greats. He never won a defensive player of the year, never got the recognition in an individual season for that, but was a 10-time Pro Bowler, a 6-time All Pro, 63 picks for him in 192 games that he played. I mean,
it's a dead heat.
This, much like Singletary and Ray Lewis, this is like kind of comparing very similar players from different eras. I could accept an argument from either one. I guess I'd lean Ronnie Lott here, but I wouldn't argue with Ed Reed. What are you thinking?
This might be the tightest matchup we have in the first round.
Yeah.
You know, again, it's similar to the Singletary Lewis deal. Two same outcome, two completely different approaches. I'm going to lean. Maybe not. I don't know. I don't know, Dallin. you know, he's Ed Reed, boy. The best you ever seen, boy. Like, he was terrifying. He was terrifying. It was him, Troy Polamalu, and Brian Dawkins. Those were the three in that time era that were just terrifying safeties. You ran a route over the middle, night. Dirt nap, you're going to sleep, because these guys are absolutely going to light you up. Ronnie Lott did the same thing, though.
Yeah.
He was the originator of this slide, if you will. Give me Ronnie Lott. Give me the OG Ronnie Lott.
I'm with you. I love Ed Reed, and I really want to take Ed Reed here, but Ronnie Lott was just too good to get bounced in the first round. I just feel like we can't bounce him in the first round out of principle. He's that legendary of a player. So
yeah,
we'll take Ronnie Lott in the 3-14, and that sets up the 11-6 matchup. Mitch, Deacon Jones, legendary defensive lineman, third all-time in NFL history in sacks, versus a current player. Yes. We put a current player on here because it's Aaron freaking Donald, who, by the way, is a 3-time defensive player of the year, 9-time Pro Bowler, 7-time All-Pro player in only 138 games. The start to this guy's career has been incredible. If it ended now, obviously, an easy Hall of Famer, but he's here as an 11 seed, Mitch, and I think Aaron Donald has a really strong case. As great as a career for Deacon Jones was, and again, third all-time in sacks, 173 over his career of 191 games, 8-time Pro Bowler, 5-time All-Pro, but I think Donald has a pretty good case too.
Look, Deacon Jones, here's why. I mean, obviously, the numbers speak for itself with Deacon Jones, but he was the originator of the term sack.
Yum.
He's the one who came up with the term sack. I'm sacking the quarterback. So he's a pioneer in a sense, as well as, you know, including all the accolades and the numbers that he has. But I don't think we've ever seen a guy come into the NFL and be as dominant from the get-go and maintain that dominance like we've seen Aaron Donald do.
Yep.
And again, completely different eras. It's tough to compare guys that were in completely different eras, but
yes,
the dominance that Aaron Donald has sustained from the word go is unmatched. And I don't think we'll ever see it again. And in that position, the defensive line position, right, for a guy that's undersized for his position to sustain this type of dominance, the physical freak that he is strength wise. Give me the upset. I'm going to go Aaron Donald over Deacon Jones.
I'm with you, Mitch. We'll take the upset in this one. And I love that this matchup is between two Rams defensive linemen that are from 50 years apart. You know, Deacon Jones playing the majority of his career in the 60s, Aaron Donald here in the 2020s doing his thing.
If you ask these two who was a better player, God rest his soul, Deacon Jones would say, oh, Aaron Donald is. And I guarantee you Aaron Donald would go, no, Deacon Jones is.
Yeah.
Yep. I guarantee you that's exactly how they'd answer it. So,
yep.
I mean, that's how close it is, and the respect amongst those guys. So,
but I'm with you there. What we've seen on Aaron Donald is unprecedented. It is incredible, and we need to appreciate it as it's happening. Even though that's hard to do in sports, it's easy to look back and appreciate guys. We have a hard time appreciating certain players in the moment and where they sit in the historical context. What Aaron Donald has done and is doing is incredible. And he is definitely one of the best. So, yeah, the upset, the first upset on the board, Aaron Donald over Deacon Jones, the 11-6. Two matchups left in the first round, Mitch. A Woodson matchup here. We had to do this. This was too easy. Number 7, Rod Woodson. Number 10, Charles Woodson. The safety versus the corner. Listen, Rod Woodson had a long career, 238 games. As a result, he's third all-time in interceptions, 71 career interceptions. He was an 11-time Pro Bowler, 6-time All-Pro. Great player, but a lot of longevity for Rod Woodson in his career. Charles Woodson played even longer, 254 games, 9-time Pro Bowler. He's tied for 5th in career interceptions with 65, so just behind Rod Woodson. Comparable long careers of really high level play. The 7-10 matchup seems fitting because those are pretty close teams. It's not, you know, super gap between those. I think this is pretty competitive. I'm curious where you're leaning in this one.
Rod Woodson was, you know, they say when you're playing safety, you got to play center field, right? You have to cover sideline to sideline. through the air. And Rod Woodson did that better than I think anyone in the history of the game. He could lay the boom when he wanted to, but damn it, he was a great coverage safety, the best we've ever seen. Charles Woodson was fantastic. We even saw him transition to safety for a minute there in Green Bay. Yep. During his time there. But Rod Woodson exemplifies the perfect coverage safety in my mind, a true ball hawk. I have to give it to Rod Woodson.
I'm with you there. I'm glad we included Charles Woodson in this exercise, because I do think he's deserving with the resume that he put up over his career. But Rod Woodson's one of the greats. Definitely should get passed in this round. We'll give it to him in the 7-10. And finally, Mitch, the 2-15 matchup. 2-seed Reggie White versus the 15-seed Alan Page. And you may not be super familiar with Alan Page. He is 8th all-time in sacks. He is a MVP. That's right. A defensive lineman, a defensive tackle who won the MVP in 1971. 9-time Pro Bowler, 5-time All-Pro, 148 and a half sacks over his career. And deserving to be on here. What he did at that era, again, played in, late 60s through the 70s. But this is a 215 for a reason, Mitch, because Reggie White has a hell of a case for the greatest defensive player of all time with what he did in his career. So I think this is a tough one for Alan Page here, and it's got to be Reggie White.
Look, Alan Page was the original Aaron Donald, physically imposing. He was a part of that Purple People Eaters defense, yep, in Minnesota. Jim Marshall, I think, was on that team. This was just the OG Aaron Donald, physically imposing, dominating. It's self-evident in his accolades, his MVP award in 1971. But I mean, come on, we're talking about Reggie White here. We can't, yep, put Reggie White out in the first round. We have to give it to Reggie.
Easy. The two advances, and we move on to the next round of the bracket. We'll go back up to the top, Mitch, for the 1-8 matchup, and we've got Lawrence Taylor, LT, versus Deion Sanders. This is a hell of a matchup. We talked about these players quite a bit, and now we got to stack up the defensive linemen in the corner here. Listen, I love Neon Deion. The accolades, the charisma, that the diva corner that we know today, started with Deion, right? That sort of mentality that, seeing like the Jalen Ramseys and those sort of types of corners, started with Deion. That being said, I mean, Lawrence Taylor has got an advance here. I'm sorry, Deion. It's a good try.
I mean, the more I think about this matchup, the more I just realize this is a blowout. I mean, it's a blowout. It's LT.
Yeah.
It's LT. This was Kentucky against VCU. I mean, this was not even close.
Yeah.
Not even close.
Yeah. Tough draw for Deion. There's the 8-seed, but that's what happens. This one, though, Mitch, this is going to be a tough one. The 5-4 matchup for a chance to take on Lawrence Taylor. And we've got the 4-seed Ray Lewis, who gets past Mike Singletary on the coin flip, and the 5-seed, the all-time sacks leader, Bruce Smith. I think this is an interesting comparison here. I think what's gonna edge me towards Ray Lewis on this one, Mitch, is that Bruce Smith, yes, has the sack total because of his 279 games played. I feel like Ray Lewis was more dominant maybe in a shorter span than Bruce Smith was, maybe more so over the course of his entire career. Obviously, he had some dominant years, don't get me wrong, but I feel like I may be leaning Ray Lewis on this one. Where are you sitting here?
I think that you can make the same argument for Ray Lewis and the tackles numbers. Like, he played for 16 years. Yeah. Like, of course he's good.
Yeah,
he
also played 228 games,
and he plays in a position that warrants a lot of tackles, right? Second level, it warrants a ton of tackles. But as I kind of play this comparison through my head, who's the more well-rounded, better football player? It's Ray Lewis.
Yeah.
It's Ray Lewis. Bruce Smith was a fantastic football player, a sack artist in the highest degree. but Ray Lewis is the more complete defensive player. And so I'm going with Ray Lewis in this one.
Okay. I like it. I'm with you on Ray Lewis as well. I won't argue that. One of my favorite players, Mitch.
He's one of mine too. Yeah.
I'm rooting for him in this bracket. I'm not going to lie. This bias there for me. The 3-11 matchup. This is a good one. Ronnie Lott, the 3 seed, and our one upset from the first round, the 11 seed, Aaron Donald. Aaron Donald able to get past Deacon Jones for the upset, the current NFL player for the Rams. Can he get past Ronnie Lott here? Mitch, what do you think?
Much like the Deion LT matchup, this is a blowout in the upset fashion. I have a hard time justifying that Ronnie Lott is going to, when it's all said and done, yeah, when Aaron Donald wraps up his career, is going to have the better career over Aaron Donald. Like I mentioned, the dominance from the word go. I mean, from the starting gun, Aaron Donald has been dominant and has not lifted his foot off the gas pedal yet. And so for those reasons alone, and Ronnie Lott's a tough draw because, you know, there's a lot of great defensive backs in NFL history.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to come across a defensive lineman that has the pedigree and has been as good as Aaron Donald has been throughout the course of his career. So I'm going Aaron Donald here.
Hey, Mitch, I will agree with you here. I won't fight you on this one. And I think, and listen, when we get down to it, we got to start really parsing out, you know, the little details of these resumes. Ronnie Lott never won Defensive Player of the Year, was never the best defensive player for a season in his career, could never get that award. And Donald's already won it 3 times. And based on what he looks like now, I mean, if he wants to keep playing, he could win another one. That's a different type of player, I think, despite what Ronnie Lott was able to put together for his career. So I'm with you. We'll go Aaron Donald. Upset again, headed to the Final Four. You'll love to see it, Mitch. And the final matchup here, Rod Woodson, the 7 seed. And Reggie White, the 2 seed. I kind of feel like I feel on this one the way that you felt about the 1-8 matchup. I think this is a very big Reggie White victory. As great as Rod Woodson was, as great as his career was, Reggie White, second all time in sacks, 13 Pro Bowls, 8 All Pro selections, and 198 career sacks. That's hard to get past. That is hard to get past for anybody, especially like here for Rod Woodson.
DBs are going to have a really tough time in this bracket, and it's shown. And so, yeah, it's Reggie. It's Reggie. Okay.
We'll go Reggie White here. The Final Four.
These are two matchups that I am not looking forward to finding an answer to.
I just want to say, first off, I would never have guessed that this was the Final Four. But when we started, put this together, I don't think I would have guessed that this was our Final Four. But here we are, and we'll start with the 1-4 matchup. Number 1, Lawrence Taylor versus number 4, Ray Lewis. Sugar Ray. He's just iconic in my mind. Again, as we were talking about his entrance, his play style, just everything about him. He had a swagger to him. And I just appreciate still to this day, and I think makes him stand out among the great defensive players in NFL history. But Lawrence Taylor is Lawrence Taylor and won a freaking MVP in the mid-80s, by the way. Like, no disrespect to Alan Page, but he won an MVP in 1971, right? The NFL was a way different place in 1971 than it was 15 years later when Lawrence Taylor won an MVP, where you had legitimate running backs and quarterbacks and legitimate players putting up numbers, and you still had a defensive player coming over top and winning that award. So love Ray Lewis. I want to say that and give him all the love in the world because he's one of my favorite players of all time. But it's got to be LT, right, Mitch?
Here's the difference between Lawrence Taylor and Ray Lewis. Ray Lewis, a fantastic player. Lawrence Taylor changed games.
Yeah.
He changed the outcome of games with his play. Yep. Got to go LT. Got to.
We will go the one seed Lawrence Taylor advanced to the finals and Mitch on the other side.
This one sucks.
Aaron
too.
Donald, Reggie White. This is, you know, and listen, I love that Donald has made it this far because he really, I really believe he deserves it. He deserves this recognition for his career already and what he's accomplished. He's a 7-time all pro in like 8 seasons. I mean, he's made the Pro Bowl in all 9 years of his career. He's never missed a Pro Bowl, Mitch, since his rookie year. He's been a Pro Bowl player. Like you said earlier, since day one, he's been that guy, you know, 20 sacks in 2018. I mean, Aaron Donald is just legit, but I mean, Reggie White.
He's Reggie White.
Reggie White was also legit, you know, 198 career sacks, 1,111 tackles in 232 games. So Darren Donald has 103 sacks in 138 games. Reggie White, 198 sacks in about 100 more games. So, I mean, technically, if Aaron Donald keeps this pace and plays as long as Reggie White does, he'll set the record for sacks all time based on where he's at right now. The problem is Donald's probably got 3 or 4 years and then he's going to be done. It could be less than that. Who knows? I mean, he talked about retiring after they won the Super Bowl. So we don't know how long we'll have him, but I love that Aaron Donald got here, but I'm kind of like how I was on the other one. It's got to be Reggie White, right?
I think if we have 3, 4, 5 years more of Aaron Donald, this conversation changes.
Could be different.
Yeah. But I think as of right now, this is still clearly Reggie White. It still is. And we're talking about now in a 1-2 matchup in the bracket to wrap it off. I mean, this is an impossible decision. I think I know where I'm going, but it seems impossible in my mind.
These are the correct two names to be here at the end, right? I know I talked about before that there's a number of ways you can go with it. If you look at different positions, if you look at different eras, you can come up with a number of different answers for the greatest defensive player in NFL history. But I think if you were going to pick two and debate them, in my mind, it's probably Lawrence Taylor and Reggie White. And I think it's pretty fitting that that's where we've ended up here in our bracket.
Yeah, you're right. And look, Reggie was much like Bruce Smith, a sack artist, but he did so much more for the game off the field. When we talk about greatness, greatness extends beyond the gridiron, right? So his contributions off the field are incredible. He was like the first big free agent signing, if I'm remembering correctly, when he left Philadelphia to go to Green Bay. LT, though, I mean, just unmatched in his well-roundedness as a player. And he didn't just do, you know, 10 things good and 2 things great and 1 thing better than anyone else. He did all 13 things better than anyone else. Like, this was the guy during his career, and he played at the same time as Reggie White. So when you look at, they played in the same era. Lawrence Taylor was still the guy over Reggie White. I'm sticking with my guns. Lawrence Taylor is the greatest defensive player and greatest football player of all time. I'm going LT.
Yeah, you know, I do think this is an interesting argument between guys with different types of careers. Reggie White, much more like the Bruce Smith, much more like a couple players we've talked about before, had a long career, 200 plus games played, was able to rack up big numbers over the course of his career to where he's second all time in sacks, you know, and he's got over 1,000 tackles and he's able to rack up these big numbers. And then you have Lawrence Taylor, who didn't have as short of a career as some of the guys we've talked about. He played 184 games. Some of these shorter career guys like a Dion, he played at 188, but you know, some of these flash in the pan. I mean, Aaron Donald's only played 138. But Taylor's more in that Donald range where he only played 12, 13 years, but man, was it a dominant like decade that he just was instantly the guy and he was the guy for that whole decade of his career, no matter what. Even when there was Reggie White's there, even when there was other guys playing, he was always the dude. Despite only amassing 142 sacks in his career, because he didn't play quite as long, still ninth career sacks all time, won an MVP, three-time defensive player of the year. It's got to be LT. It's got to be LT. So there you have it. Consensus here on the Sports Hour podcast. The greatest defensive player of all time in NFL history. We're saying Lawrence Taylor. And I think most would agree.
I think most would agree. I think that this is a consensus pick across the public, even.
Yeah.
Lawrence Taylor is the greatest defensive player of all time. God, that there were some tough matchups there. There were some tough matchups. Was there anyone that you would have liked to see in the bracket? Or we left out, or?
Yeah, there's a couple names that I want to just bring up here. The guys that didn't make it, but I definitely considered and wanted to throw in there. J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt is one. Shorter career, 151 games, but three-time defensive player of the year. He's sort of in that mold of when he was playing, he was the best player in the league and just dominated it. Michael Strahan was another one, 10th all-time in sacks, you know, long career with the Giants. Champ Bailey, Darrell Revis were the other two in the defensive backfield. Champ had a long career, 12 Pro Bowls, over 200 games. Darrell Revis was Darrell Revis, Revis Island, shorter career, but dominated in it and Hall of Famer. So those were the some of the names that I really wanted to consider here and wanted to put in, but didn't find a spot. What about you?
Yeah, I had some older guy names that I thought maybe could have made a substitution for some of the older guy names that we had up there. Randy White, Bob Lilly, Willie Lanier, Chuck Bednarik, Jack Lambert, Jack Ham, Mel Blount, Randy White. I mean, Jack Youngblood. I mean, there was just so many big names that before the podcast started, I advocated for Night Train Lane for a second.
Yeah.
There's just so many really, really good players that clearly we're not disrespecting them at all. We want them to have all the respect in the world for their careers and the players that they were. But darn it, I feel like we had the right 16 in there. I really do.
We certainly could have done 32 and had a deep, deep list of names, and we still would have left great players off at the end of the day. I that's why I thought this exercise would be fun, and I'm glad we did it today on the podcast. Let us know what you guys thought. Did we end up with the right player? Is it Lawrence Taylor? Do you think it should have been someone else? Do you think we missed somebody or had an egregious pick here? Let us know if you're watching live. Let us know in the comments if you're listening to the podcast here in the future. Let us know on social media what you thought of the bracket. Did you have a good time, Mitch, on that? I thought that was great.
I had a fantastic time. I mean, I love doing these brackets with you. I can't wait till our next one. I think we got a couple ideas. We're going to workshop still, but the bracket's always a fun time. It's a good time for a little bit of debate and it's a good thought exercise when we're talking about this type of stuff. So
yeah, and being able to place guys head to head and make that argument, who's better between A and B? You know, it's easy in a vacuum to say, oh, this guy was great, this guy was great. Well, put Dion and Lawrence Taylor next to each other and then tell me, you know, who's better. And it makes it a little bit of a different conversation. So that's what we love doing here on the Sports Hour. So this has been a lot of fun. That's all we got for the podcast today. We appreciate you hanging around, as you always do. If you do not already, I want you to check us out on social media. Follow us on TikTok at the Sports Hour Guys. Follow us on Instagram as well at the Sports Hour Guys. You can follow us live every Wednesday night when we go live on Twitter at Sports Hour Guys or on YouTube at youtube.com/The Sports Hour Guys. Check out the website, thesportshourguys.wordpress.com. Mitch, tell the people where they can get the podcast. Anchor anymore. I mean, you can, but we gotta adjust how we're promoting this now.
Type in Anchor on the search bar and you'll find it.
Yes.
Podcasts or Spotify for podcasters / The Sports Hour Guys. you'll find us there. Get on there and leave us a voice message. We'd love for to hear from you. Become a permanent part of the conversation with us. You leave us a voice message on there. We will play this live right here on the show. Answer your question live right here. So no longer anchor.fm. I think it's Spotify podcast or Spotify. We'll get it all ironed out. Okay. But type in Anchor. You'll find us there. You can listen to us, though, wherever that you get your podcasts. That's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. Just look up the Sports Hour guys, and you will find us. Go on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and review. Tell us that we suck, because down onto that is the only way that we can get better.
It is the only way that we could get better, and we'd very much like to do that. Quick note before we wrap up here. Got a big date coming up here on Saturday. May 13th, it is the 5-year anniversary of this here podcast. 165 episodes down, and we'll be celebrating 5 years on Saturday. Crazy to think that it's already been 5 years of doing the Sports Hour. Just nuts. So
it's absolutely insane. And if you've been a longtime listener, you know exactly what comes on the anniversary episode. So stay tuned for that next week, because it will be our way too early NFL predictions for the 2023-2024 season. It's a thing every year. It was our first episode. It's basically the start of the new season for us. So stay tuned for that. That'll be a lot of fun. But Dallin, happy 5 years. It's been a great 5 years, my friend. And I can't wait to continue to do more of this with you.
Absolutely crazy to think it's been 5 years. We love the way too early. It's like literally my favorite episode all year. A chance to just stake those, take 6 months early on a team that you think's gonna win, or some player you think's gonna be good, and we just get to have a little fun, and you know, and not feel so much pressure on getting those things right, but just, you know, get some thoughts out there. So that'll be next week's podcast episode, so you won't want to miss it. You can tune in again Wednesday nights live, 6 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Mountain Time, on YouTube, on Twitter. You can catch us live, and then of course listen to the podcast afterwards if you can't join us. But way too early predictions coming up next week. NFL schedule will be released tomorrow on May 11th, so we'll finally have the full schedule ahead of us. So that's all we got, Mitch. That's gonna do it. The Sports Hour today. Much fun, and it's been so good to be here with you all. So until next time, we love you, we appreciate you, and we will catch you next week.
So long, everybody, and a very pleasant good evening to you, wherever you may be. See ya.